for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 594 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, James Aquilone, accomplished horror writer and editor, returns, and he's crowdfunding his latest project on Kickstarter for the Dead Detective Society and Monstrous Magazine. In the tradition of great pulps of yesteryear, Kevin J. Anderson, Steve Niles, Nancy A. Collins, Joe R. Lansdale, and Casey Lansdale, David Avalon, Jonathan Maybury, Lisa Morton, Nancy Holden, and Alan Phillipson, and others, including James, are creating 13 short stories, each accompanied by a full-page illustration by artists including Zach Atkinson and J.K. Woodward. This Kickstarter is doing very well, but there's still some time to support it, and I highly encourage you to do that. It will conclude on Wednesday, June 28 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We talk about the book and how it came to be, as well as the Monstrous Magazine. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. In the tradition of the great pulps of yesteryear, contemporary masters of the macabre and writer and editor James Aquilone are joining forces for Dead Detectives Society. This one-of-a-kind anthology from Monstrous Books features a cover by Hugo Award winner John Jennings, an interior art by J.K. Woodward and other good folks. And it's great to welcome back to the podcast, James Aquilone. How you doing, James?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on again. I think this is the third time or a second.
I think it's three. The third time. I think we're setting a record here. We're trying to get as many as we can done. Now, of course, this is all going on Kickstarter, Dead Detective Society, and you were telling me it's going to conclude. The thing to do is go to Kickstarter.com and look it up, and you'll find Dead Detective Society, and it'll give you all the good details. So we don't want to miss that because we want to be sure we get it out there. So before we get to all this good stuff, why don't you update us on your other projects that you and I have talked about? How are things? Are other things all fulfilled? Are there some things you're still working on? How's that going?
Yeah, so I think we first talked about the Kolchak graphic novel I did. And that, that's all fulfilled. Earlier this year, everyone got their books. Mm-hmm. There's still books available if you go to my website, monstrousbooks.com. You still can get books there. And the book won a Rondo Hatton Classic Horror Award. Oh, wow. That we would name like the best graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And then we're nominated for a Bram Stoker Award too, which I don't know when this will come out, but we might have either won or lost. The Stokers are in the middle of June, so I'll find out then.
Well, you know what they say. It's great just to be nominated.
It is.
That's always a good thing to say. So that's a good thing. Were there other projects you're working on that we talked about? I'm trying to remember.
I think we talk about the Shakespeare Unleashed?
I think we did, yeah. So how's that coming?
That was the one that was right after that. I've fulfilled some of it. I didn't get the books yet. I just got the first proof today, and it looks great. So we'll hopefully get the books in a couple of weeks, and then we can send those all out.
That'll be great. Well, look forward to that. That's going to be great fun to see. It's all going to be great. Now, in Dead Detective Society, there's a whole bunch of greatest weird detectives in pulpdom are involved. And let's see, the list that I understand includes Dan Shambles, Zombie PI, Cal McDonald, Matt Richter, Zombie Detective, Sonia Blue, a punk vampire hunter, and Dead Jack, Zombie Detective. That's you're writing a story about, right?
Yeah, that's my character.
Okay, so that was in Weird Tales magazine. It's featured in three novels from you, Bram Stoker Award nominated editor and writer. So congratulations on that. Is that, do you know how the book's going to come together yet? Is that going to be early in the book? Is that going to be later in the book? How's that going to happen?
I haven't figured out yet, but probably later in the book.
Okay. There we go. Now, according to the description, according to what I see, is Dead Jack has a dilemma on his hands when a creepy werewolf asks the zombie detective to kill him. The fairy dust addicted PI must decide to become an assassin or allow dozens of innocent fairies to get devoured. Ooh, do you know how long that story's going to be?
It should be about 5,000 words. So maybe like something like 15, 20 pages.
Okay. So is this is all going to be like a text intensive book?
Yeah. So it'll be a prose, but each story will have its own illustration. Well, each story, like the beginning of the story, will have a full page illustration. We'll have the title on it. So it'll be like each story will get like its own cover.
Cool. So they'll kind of give us some graphics and stuff like that.
Right.
So that'll be great. So let's see. Other ones. The Dan Shamble one is called Mystery Meat. The Dan Shamble is back from the dead and back on the case. In the unnatural quarter, inhabited by all manner of unusual people, Dan has to solve his wormiest case yet. When Mama Fly's children go missing and secretive industrial magnate Gold Boris launches a brand new mystery meat product that's taken the unnaturals by storm. That doesn't sound all that good.
No.
Now you edited this, and this is one of the ones that you edited, right?
Yes.
Okay. What was it like to edit these kinds of things? I mean, you know, because a lot of these stories, this character was in 9 novels and dozens of short stories by Kevin J. Anderson. So what's it like to edit somebody like Kevin J. Anderson?
Well, that's amazing because, you know, Kevin J. Anderson's done, he's written like tons of Star Wars novels and Dune. So he's a big deal. So it's cool to get to edit somebody like that. And since I had my zombie detective, Dead Jack, I was very aware of Kevin's zombie detective as well for years. So that was one of the things I wanted to do with this, was to get them together in one book.
Great, great. Now, Jin J. Fox, Death Investigator, by Rena Mason. I didn't see that in other parts in there. Slain after receiving the dreaded fourth tale, the unrelenting vixen, Jin J. Fox, is given another chance to earn her full powers back as well as immortality. Rena Mason. What's Rena Mason done?
She's done, this is a character that comes from an anthology that she was in called Black Cranes, which was stories by Asian authors. This is a really interesting character. She's like, she's half human and half of a fox spirit. So sometimes she can morph into a fox. So it takes place in Chinatown in San Francisco in 1906. And okay. you know, history. There was a big earthquake in 1906, so that factors into the story.
Okay, so something to look forward to there. Now, the Tim Wagner's Necropolis series is the one where Matt Richter's Zombie Detective comes from. His story is called "Half a Monster is Better than None," by Tim Wagner. Zombie PI Matt Richter works the very mean streets of Necropolis, an other dimensional city full of monsters, ghosts, and witches. Matt's latest client is a shifter with a unique problem. She's a, I don't know how to pronounce this, werthylocene? Is that right?
I think that's how you say it, yeah.
Okay, an exceptionally rare breed, and someone has stolen her animal form, making it impossible for her to change shape. Even if Matt can figure out who stole her shifter form and why, how can he possibly reunite his client's two halves and make her whole again? Good thing Matt's already dead, or this case just might kill him. So, Tim Wagner, talk a little bit about the Matt Richter and his character.
That's another zombie PI character. So, well, years ago, I wrote the first Dead Jack story. I wrote it like 2006. And I love detective stories, and I wanted to do like a weird detective type story. So I came up with the idea of doing a zombie detective. I thought that was kind of a crazy idea. Mm-hmm. I wasn't familiar with this other stuff yet. And I just filed the story away because I didn't think anyone would publish the story because it was a little crazy. So about 5 or 6 years later, when I finally was taking my like writing career seriously, there was a call from Weird Tales. They were doing a zombie detective. They were doing a zombie issue. And I submitted it to them. But before that, I wanted to see, like, well, was my idea as original as I thought it was? So I said, let me Google zombie detective. See, maybe there are other zombie detectives out there. And I don't want to look like I'm ripping anybody else off. So when I Googled it, the first thing that came up was Tim Wagner's zombie detective series, which called Necropolis. And that's the name of his world, was Necropolis. And that was the name of my world. So then that was a good thing I Googled it, because then I immediately changed it from Necropolis to Pandemonium. So then years later, I ended up working with Tim Wagner. He's been in, he was in the Kolchak book. He was in my first anthology, Classic Monsters Unleashed. And he's in Shakespeare Unleashed. So then I also started working with Kevin J. Anderson a little bit. And then I said, you know, I have this detective, zombie detective story. So would that be pretty cool now if I can get all these guys together and put them in one book? So that's really how it started. It started with Tim's zombie detective and Kevin J. Anderson's zombie detective. I mean, originally I was going to just do zombie detective. Then that felt a little one note. So we kind of expanded it.
So what's the difference between them? Because now you're editing these other zombie PI and detectives. What do you see as the difference between the two of them? There's Dan Shamble,
yeah,
zombie PI, and then Matt Richter, and then there's Dead Jack, your character. What do you see as the difference between the three of those?
I think mine's maybe a little more irreverent than theirs. Mine's a little more crazy, because I have Dead Jack, is he's addicted to fairy dust and he's a heavy drinker and smoker, so I go a little bit more further than they do. I don't think Tim's isn't as humorous. He's a little more serious and darker. Dan Shamble's a little more similar to my Dead Jack character. That's a little more on the humor side. There are a lot of similarities that, you know, I tried to stay away at first from reading Dan Shamble because I didn't want to, you know, inadvertently rip off Kevin's stuff.
Right.
But then when I started reading it now, because I have to read it for this anthology, and I noticed that there are some similarities, but I think ultimately, my character, he's in a totally different dimension. So that's more of like the world is kind of based like on 1940s, like New York City. And so that's totally like, you know, in another dimension with just that's filled with monsters and every like mythological creature. And Kevin's, it's called the Unnatural Quarter, which is like in New Orleans, but it's in our world.
Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, how does a zombie become a PI? I'm curious about that.
I think with Dan Shamble, he was a cop before he died.
Okay.
So then he died and he just continued on, taking cases. With mine, it's a little more. He's a little more mysterious, but in mine, he was a soldier in World War II, and then he died. And then, well, it's a long story, but in my world, everybody. Is transport all of the supernatural creatures from our world are transported to this other dimension during World War II. So that's how they all get trapped in what I call Pandemonium. But but Jack is turned into a zombie before that. So it involves Nazis and Nazis, you know, creating like an army of the undead, and Jack was part of that. And then in order to stop the Nazis, from the first book, it's called the Pandemonium Device, and that's created and that's used and to transport all these supernatural creatures and get rid of them because they're causing trouble during the war. And then they're all kind of banished to Pandemonium.
Okay, how does a zombie get addicted to fairy dust? I'm curious about that. Is that part of the... You need to read that to really get the understanding of that.
Yeah, so then Jack does, you know, since he's a zombie, he has then the urges to eat flesh. So he takes the fairy dust because that curbs his appetite and allows him to kind of control it. So he's like one of those, you know, like those vampires who don't want to suck blood. So he's a vampire that doesn't want to eat brains. So he's always trying to control that. So the fairy dust helps him to do that.
Okay. The case of the ravenous werewolf, though, a creepy werewolf asks him to kill him. I guess we got to read the story to understand how that all worked out. Because I don't understand many werewolves that want to get killed. So that'll be something to interesting to. Well, that's new ground. Yeah, it's new ground to cover. So that'll be fun to see how that goes. So that'll be lots of fun. So let's see. Other ones here. There's Snippy by Jeff Strand. Timothy Perkins incorrectly promotes himself as the greatest detective who ever lived. His most marketable skill is his ability to wander into dangerous situations. Because every time he's killed, he comes back to life. This advantage is offset by his occasional glimpses into the void where he screams in uncontrollable terror because there is no existence beyond our current realm. Hopefully, he can get his client's dog back. the dog, I take his name Snippy.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, that's a good thing for that. So I'm kind of curious, Timothy. So Jeff Strand, I didn't see that in there too. Can you give us a little bit of information on Jeff Strand?
Well, Jeff writes mainly a humorous horror. Mm-hmm. He's been doing it for a long time, and he's great at it. He just did a novelization of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Is also really funny. And this story is very funny. It's very kind of wild. And I don't know if I can explain it, but it's very humorous. So, but that's his specialty and he's very good at it. So I was really happy that he came in and did this. He also did one of the stories in, with Shakespeare Unleashed where I did a companion, comic book and he did something on Taming of the Shrew, which is very funny as well.
Okay, now, is this the first Timothy Perkins story?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is a debut of this kind of character. That'll be interesting, because I worry about a dog that's named Snippy. I have to be concerned about that. Can you talk to me a little bit now? Sonia Blue, the punk vampire hunter who starred in four novels as well as short stories and comics, from Nancy Collins, Punk Vampire Hunter. That's an area I haven't gone to very often. Can you fill us in a little bit more about who Sonia Blue is?
Well, this character, I think, started in, I think, one of Nancy's first novels. I think it might have been her first novel, Sunglasses After Dark, which came out in 1989. I think she won the Bram Stoker Award for Best First Novel with that. So it's one of her first characters. And since I think there's several novels, there's a bunch of short stories, and there are a couple of comic books as well. I think IDW did a few Sonya Blue comics, graphic novels. So I think she's mainly a vampire hunter. Mm-hmm. So this is more now, with this story, she's more kind of leaning more into like private investigation. So the idea too with this book is that we take the older characters like Sonya Blue and Dan Shamble and then add new characters, but then the idea is to continue this as a series, so then have a Dead Detective Society, you know, anthology every year, hopefully. And then continue these, you know, stories with these characters. So I would love to see you know, more Sonya Blue stories and more Dan Shamble story, and maybe we'll have new Timothy Perkins stories as well.
I like that Dan Shamble. Chris's how the zombies tend to walk. They shamble. They don't they don't tend to walk. So that's kind of cute. That now there's some new
and he's
macabre investigator
too.
Uh huh. Oh, good. Well,
that'd be kind of fun. Yeah. So I don't know. Just by coincidence, there's like it's the ninth Dan Shamble novel that Kevin J. Anderson's putting out, and he's doing it's a Kickstarter, which is it's running right now. But I think it's going to end like the beginning of June.
Okay. Okay, I didn't know that. That's good. Now, there's some new macabre investigators added to the ranks, including a reanimated Nick Carter by David Avalon, based on the character who appeared in the novels written by his father, Michael Avalon. So that's another zombie character?
He's not technically a zombie, but he is reanimated.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between a zombie and a reanimated
character? Oh, boy. Well, the more like classic definition, it would be, zombies are usually not as intelligent as, you know, the character we have though. So, like a dead jack is intelligent, but normally, you know, your standard zombie isn't. I mean, you know, a zombie and a vampire are pretty much the same thing. The only thing that really is different is that the vampire is intelligent, you know? So that's why we would consider like a zombie, usually because they're brainless, you know?
Okay.
But with this, with the Nick Carter character, it's more along the lines of like Captain America, where he dies and then they reanimate him like 20 years later.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that'll be interesting. That's kind of, does this take place in the present or is this another one of those in the past?
No, I think this be taking place in the 60s.
Okay, all right. Do they all kind of take place in different time periods? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, they take place in different time periods, different dimensions. So they're all over the place with that.
Because one that intrigues me is called Saul Wen, Halloween Detective by John Jennings and Jin G. Fox. Sorry. What? Halloween Detective. What's the, can you give us a little more information on that one?
Now that, I haven't seen that story yet.
Okay.
John is still working on it. So I first saw this character, he's an artist and he also did the cover.
Oh.
And, he did one of the prose stories in the Kolchak, graphic novel.
Okay.
And, I forget what happened. But he had shown me this illustration he did for this character, and it's great. If you look at the Kickstarter image, he's that green phase guy in the back. So it was like a really interesting looking guy, and he told me about this character, Saul Wen, Halloween Detective, and it sounded really cool. So I said, you know, have you done any stories on this character? He said, no. And so I said, this would be a great time to, you know, to use that. And so we have the story, but he hasn't written it yet.
Okay. But it's going to be included in the book when the book comes out.
Yes. If he ever finishes the story.
Okay.
Well, the only thing I know is that I think the character was also a police officer or something. He dies and he ends up like in this, this weird realm where he's then has to like work for like this demon. And it sounds crazy, but it sounds very cool. I think it's kind of similar to like The Night Before Christmas, where it's Jack Skellington. He's like the Pumpkin King. And he's kind of like this. He's Saul's kind of like the Halloween King. So, but I'm really looking forward to that story, and the artwork's amazing. So I hopefully we're going to be debuting that in a few weeks.
Okay, great. Now, one other one that kind of attracts my attention is called Death Investigator by Rena Mason, based on the character from her story in the award-winning anthology Black Cranes. Who is there any more information on Death Investigator?
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about before about the she's half human, half fox spirit.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Yeah. There it is. Vixen Screams. Yeah, that's that one there. Okay. All right. I didn't put the two of them together. So that's interesting. So that's in the 1900s San Francisco.
Yeah.
Okay, so that'll be interesting. Because is there any of them that take? I'm just curious. Any of them take place in the current era, or are they mostly in the past?
No, well, the Jeff Strand one is in the present. Mm-hmm. Like, I think technically the Dan Shambles take place in our time. Okay. Tony Blue too, which it would be in the present. The Joe Lansdale, Casey Lansdale story takes place in the present as well.
Cool. Okay. Very good. Very good. Because it's interesting because, I mean, when you're editing stories like that, how careful do you have to be to make sure that we don't have modern terminology and stuff showing up in like the 1900s or something like that? How do you have to really be, you know, immerse yourself back in that time period when you're editing that story?
Yeah, that comes up sometimes. So luckily, I'm old enough to have known, you know, some of these time periods and know that some of it, you know, is out of place. So, you know, sometimes they make a reference and say, well, you know, this didn't happen at that time. And, you know, let's take that out. So you do have to be aware of that. But if it's, you know, if it's like 19th century stuff, you know, I don't have, I mean, I probably miss stuff like that too. I'm not like an history expert, so I don't worry too much about that. I mean, if it's something that like just really sticks out and you say, oh, well, you know, that doesn't sound like something someone would say in that time period. But I'm sure there's stuff that sneaks in there that probably is like, you know, well, this word didn't exist till like 1920, you know, and it's in there. And that's possible. I mean, I don't get too crazy about that. Mm-hmm. But I just don't want it to sound too, you know, out of place.
Right. Well, and of course, you got to trust your author to know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, that you certainly, you know, you'll get people then emailing you after the book is published and saying, you know, why did you say this? Or why did you have this, you know, or, you know, somebody being an expert on cars or something. And they say, well, this car didn't exist that, you know, so.
Well, just tell them to go back and talk to the author.
Yeah, I blame them.
Because, you know, your job is to make sure they make sense. It doesn't, you're not supposed to necessarily verify every single detail and make sure it's historically accurate. Yeah,
and it's fiction, so I don't worry too much about that. And I have another proofreader too, who if I don't catch anything, hopefully he catches it.
Okay, very good. Very
but we make mistakes. Well,
welcome to the world of literature. I'm always intrigued when people think that somehow everybody knows everything about the subjects they're writing about. And, you know, no, it doesn't always happen.
No, a lot of us just make it up.
And of course, you know, you can always say these are alternate universes, and maybe the car that was that's in today's world actually existed in that time period back in that alternate universe. So that's always a good way to come up with these good things. The great thing about fiction is, you know, it's as opposed to historical, you know, novels and stuff like that, where you got to be completely accurate. This is, of course, being a horror and good things like that. You don't have
to. Yeah, personally, I don't worry about that stuff in my own fiction. I do like to just make it up. I mean, I was always a fan of Flash Gordon, the old serials. Mm-hmm. And they didn't care. And they didn't know anything, too, about space travel. And they just made it up, you know. So they would have, you know, the spaceships, there would be smoke would be coming out of them and stuff like that. And you know, spaceships would be making sound. And, you know, there's not supposed to be any sound in space, you know. Well, Star Wars did the same thing. We're not supposed to hear, you know.
I always get a kick out of that because, you know, because I always get a kick when people – although I have to say, one of the great things about science fiction, maybe this is true of horror as well, so many people I know who are big science fiction writers and buffs and stuff, they can't use technology. They don't seem to be able to understand that. And yet, here they are writing about spaceships and star travel and stuff like that. And I'm always going, it reminds me very much. I was at a convention where Jonathan Frakes, who was Riker on Next Generation, was up there. And this younger kid comes up to the microphone and says to him, I don't understand how warp drive works. Right. And he starts to go into the science of it. And all of a sudden, Jonathan Frakes bursts into the song Volare. Volare, whoa. You know, and the kid's looking at him sort of baffled, and the whole place is dying laughing. He says, you know, he says, I'm not the person to ask that question to. He says. Right. So I always get a kick out of that. I think it's true of horror, too.
Yeah, because, you know, when I was first starting to write, and I did want to write science fiction, and I felt like, well, you know, I don't know much about science. So I felt like, oh, I can't write science. But when I got into it and I met other writers, a lot of them didn't know anything about science either. And it's, it's more about the story. And there are certainly science fiction writers who are like the hard science fiction writers who I've heard say things like they do the math, they figure, and then other writers just kind of wing it. Or when it comes to the more technical, you know, if you're writing a time travel story, you don't get into the technical matters of trying to figure out and make it seem realistic, like how does the TARDIS work? You just usually go, oh, well, it's a lithium crystals, and that's how it works, you know? So you just want to get into the story. I mean, I never cared how the stuff worked, you know?
I read a fantasy story. It was a comic book, and there was a city, and there were animal people walking around. And I asked him, I said, you know, do you ever get asked where those animal people come from? He says, I tell those people I don't care where they came from. They're just there.
Right.
And I always get a kick out of that because, you know, some people fixate on the details and they're sitting there going like, well, how can that possibly be? How can they have animals walking around on their back legs like that? And he just said, don't bother me. Don't bother me with that stuff. I'm just telling the story here.
Well, reality can sometimes come in and destroy your story. So, you don't want that to happen. So sometimes you just have to leave those plot holes there or you wouldn't have a story. And sometimes you can have like a really cool story or a cool idea for a scene. Mm-hmm. And you'd say, well, this couldn't happen. And, you know, so you have to either decide, you either can figure it out or just go with it. I mean, that's why, a lot of people will say like Star Wars isn't real science fiction, which I don't think it is, but I don't care because, George Lucas certainly didn't care about leaving all these huge plot holes, you know, and try to explain how all these things work or how a lightsaber works. Mm-hmm. You know, be just like, oh, this is cool. Let's just go with it. And sometimes I think you can kill the story by trying to be too science fiction, sciencey about it, and being like, well, this couldn't happen. It's like, you know, or like something like Indiana Jones, and they do this crazy stuff that, like, you know, just defies physics. But, you know, although they always make a big deal about the the last movie with the when he's in the refrigerator during the nuclear blast. But to me, that's just fun. You know, it doesn't have to always make sense or be so tied to reality. I mean, because it's speculative fiction. It's not supposed to, you know, to adhere to it reality.
Well, I have to tell you a quick story. There was we were watching, they made a movie, the Stargate SG-1 was starting up on Showtime, and they had like a 2-hour movie. And a bunch of us are watching it, me and my friends, and all of a sudden we got to this place where this general takes off his hat inside of a building. And this one guy who was apparently aware of military protocols and stuff, they'd never do that. He'd never take his hat off. And on and on and on he went about the general with his hat coming off. And we had to turn to him and say, will you please stop? We don't care about that. We're trying to watch the movie. You know, we grant you that, yes, that's a mistake, but we want to watch the movie. And boy, he grumbled all the way through the whole movie about the hat. And I was just and we were just like, oh, man, come on.
Yeah.
We're trying to watch a movie here. So that's the kind of things that go on. You have to be really careful when you do stuff like that. Now, I do have a question, a couple of questions, actually, about Dead Detective Society as a book. Are you the person who assembled all the different stories and, like, the authors? Did you know people you want to be in the book? Was there somebody else that did it? How did the stories get put into the book?
No, it's just me. It's so I started my own publishing company about a year and a half ago called Monstrous Books. Mm-hmm. And then Shakespeare Unleashed was the first book that we did, and now this is the second. So it's just me doing everything. And, you know, so since I did Dead Jack, this is, you know, very much along the lines of, you know, the type of fiction that I enjoy and I'm familiar with. So, like I said, I knew about Dan Shamblin. I knew about the Matt Richter character. Some of these others, you know, I worked with Nancy Collins too on Kolchak. So then I was familiar with Hasonya Blue character. So then I was just like looking around for any other characters that would fit. And then I asked the other half of the writers just to create their own new detective. Because I also like, you know, there is like a little bit of a subgenre now with zombie detectives. So there's a few others. And maybe one day we'll get them in the book too. So I'd like to expand this subgenre of these supernatural detectives. So I'm hoping that with the second half of the book, where we're asking writers to create their own, that those characters will continue on, and maybe we can make this subgenre a little bit bigger.
Okay. Now, Chris, when I hear the name Dead Detective Society, I kind of think it's like a Justice League kind of a setup. This is a group. Is there going to be a story at some point where you're going to bring, now granted, some of them in the 1900s San Francisco, some of them in the modern era. Is there any going to ever be a group, a gathering together of at least some of these characters to form the society? Or is that, am I reading too much into the title?
We don't have that in this book, but that's something eventually I'd like to do. And then start doing crossover stuff. So right now this is more like a loose kind of group. So it's not that, you know, they're separate stories based in those authors' worlds. So we haven't really gotten together to kind of create how the society stuff came together, but that's going to be in there. We're going to try to work that in. And in future issues, I'm hoping that we will then be able to start crossing characters over. Right, with this book, I just want to establish the book and get everybody into it, and then you know, get it launched. And then I'm hoping that as we progress, then we'll see some more interplay between the characters, and then maybe we'll see in future installments of this more and more like background on the society.
And maybe they could have different society times depending, like in the 1900s, maybe the group would get together for something in the current era. Cause it reminds me a little bit. If you ever watched Supernatural and then the Winchesters, which was the prequel, they had what they called the Men of Letters in there. Mm-hmm. And that group had different people, and of course, depending on whether you were in Supernatural in the present, supposedly, or Winchester's in the past, you know, you had different people in it. And of course, that added some mystery as to who was actually members and who weren't. And so it strikes me something along those lines, that maybe there is a society that goes along through history, but none are not all in it at the same time. They might have different time periods are involved. Some way it could be done.
So. Yeah. I mean, we'll get into that because I don't want to say too much about it, but yeah, we'll get into that. And I'm hoping that one day I would love to see an ongoing comic with Dead Detective Society, where we do like the, you know, old school anthology type comics where we have like a featured story and then some backup stories. You know, they'll all be like a one shot.
Right. Sounds like fun. Because those kinds of things, I think, are great, great storytelling ideas. And see, I always like it when groups of characters get together, because when we see them bounce off of each other, we learn a lot about them. And so for me, I like those kinds of stories. It's good to establish. I mean, Marvel did that as far as the movies go. But as far as, you know, once you've established the individual characters, it's fun to see them in different situations. Sometimes they're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody's they're working with somebody that they shouldn't have to work to, but the circumstances require it. And those kinds of things I really enjoy. I like to see characters in uncomfortable situations because those kinds of things are great fun.
Well, Kevin J. Anderson's Dan Shamble, he had done a comic book where he's with Kolchak.
Hmm. Wow.
And I'm going to try to get him to make some of those books available with this Kickstarter, and then he'll sign them. But that was one of the examples of that, of getting those characters together. It's kind of hard to get them the license for something like Kolchak to get him in. But Kolchak, because this is very much along the lines of Kolchak, it's like that kind of fun, you know, horror investigation type story. So after I did Kolchak, I kind of came up with this idea. But I would love to see that. I would love to see more of the characters, you know, interacting with each other. And I would love to bring Kolchak in if I could.
I was going to say, are there other characters you would like to bring in future books? In there? You answered that before I could ask it, so that's very good. Do you know roughly how many pages is going to be in this book?
It should be like about 300 pages.
Okay. Do you know roughly when you're hoping to get it out? Are you planning to get this out around Halloween? Because that would be an ideal time for this book to come out.
I am. I'm hoping that it'll come out around that, about the end of the year. Almost all the stories are in. So they're going to be 13 stories, and I have 10 of them. So I'm just waiting on the last three. So I'm hoping that we can turn this book around pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Because even if you don't make it by Halloween, if you can get it out by the holiday season, yeah. So people can give.
It could definitely be out before the end of the year. It should be out in time for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Always a good time, because I always get a kick out of Christmas stories where they talk about, you know, scary ghost stories and stuff like that. What scary ghost stories are I thinking of? And then I remember the Christmas Carol.
That's right.
Which has ghosts and stuff involved in that and stuff. So I Christmas is, because it's a mystical sort of a time, you can do those kinds of things, especially with people who are fans of horror and stuff like that. You can, if people are looking for something to give somebody who's into that kind of thing, this is a perfect holiday gift giving thing to do. So it's just perfect.
Yeah, because with a lot of the Kickstarters, it becomes difficult to get that book out on time. So. Mm-hmm. We've been kind of good about it with the other Kickstarters. So this time I wanted to get most of the stories, if not all of the stories, in before we even launched the Kickstarter. So that way we're much further along on, putting it together, because it's really hard to run a Kickstarter and also try to put the book together at the same time. So it's a little bit easier if we can get the stories in first, and then work on it. And then, when we launch the Kickstarter, say, okay, it's ready to go. Because people don't want to wait a year, normally to get their book. So the faster we can get it done, the better.
Well, there are still some Kickstarters I have paid for years ago that I have yet to see. So
I know, me too.
You're way ahead of even those people. So I congratulate you on getting there. If you can get it out by Halloween, I always tell the story of Grant Morrison and his book Klaus. It's about Santa Claus.
Right.
And what happened was, the first issue of this miniseries came out in the Christmas season. The last issue came out in May. Mm-hmm. And I was convinced I was the only person in the month of May that still wanted to read a Christmas story. So they don't do that anymore. He puts out one, like, it always comes out the Wednesday before Christmas.
Right.
And I always congratulate them on that, because that, I'm sure that first time, by the time the last issue came out, there was like a fraction of the ones that came out in Christmas time. So I always tell people, think ahead, plan for these things, because my goodness, if you can get this out by Halloween, or even, like I said, Christmas is still great. You come out in the middle of the spring, I know that some people say horror goes any time of the year, but I just think that there are times of the year when it's a little bit better. So I'd love to see this in time for Halloween or Christmas. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, we're definitely going to try to do that, because I hate when it's late and I hate having to wait like a year for the book to come out. I would love to do the Kickstarter and you know, like 2 weeks or so after we just start delivering the books. That'd be great.
There's nothing better than that. You get your money's worth right away. And it's just great. So it just sounds like great stuff. And so this going to have Dead Detective Society number 2, hopefully. And maybe, like you said, every year we get this in time for Halloween or Christmas. And it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So I love the variety. Some of them are sound like they're straight horror. Some of them sound like they're funnier.
Yeah.
Some of them sound like they're very different kinds of stories, you know, a punk vampire hunter versus an occult detective. Very different kinds of stories. So that's going to be a lot of fun to read. I think you're doing a great job. I think it's making something really fun to get.
Yeah, it is definitely a fun one. And we have a lot of different types of detectives. And like, you know, the Nick Carter one's a little more like an action pulp type story. That's actually a really awesome story, the one that David Avalon did. Like you said before, his father wrote Nick Carter novels in the 60s. Nick Carter actually is older than Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. The first Nick Carter story came out like a year before Sherlock Holmes came out. So he was like one of the first pulp detectives, going back to like 1885 or something. And then he had his own pulp magazine in the 30s and 40s. And then in the 60s, they kind of reinvented him as like a James Bond type character. Mm-hmm. And those were the books that Michael Avalone wrote. So it was really cool to have David kind of go back and write it like in his father, his style. And it's really very pulpy, very action packed. And it's very cool.
It just sounds like a great book. I think people are going to really enjoy it. If people want to keep up with what you're doing, how do they do that? Are you on social media someplace, James?
Yeah, you can go to monstrousbooks.com, and that's where you can buy all the books and check out what we're up to. And there's also links to our Twitter accounts and Facebook. But either under my name, James Aquilone, or Monstrous Books, I'm pretty much on everything, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Okay. And once again, it's Dead Detective Society. It's on Kickstarter. For all the specifics, be sure to go to Kickstarter and look for Dead Detective Society and get the information there. So, James, much success. I can't wait to see this book. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to read. I think a lot of people are going to really enjoy it. So keep up the wonderful stuff.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it was great to be here for the third time. I believe it's 3.
So I believe so, too.
Talk to you.
Okay. Thanks so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.